Welcome back to Mark's Gospel. Today, Jesus celebrates one of the great traditions of the Jewish year and starts one of his own. We're in Mark 14 today. Jesus and his disciples have been in and around Jerusalem all week, and the crowds from all over Israel have gathered for the Passover. Jesus spent much of the week answering the questions and challenges of the priests and religious leaders among the Jews. A conspiracy is brewing. All these questions have an ulterior motive, as the jealous leaders dig and prod for any grounds to put Jesus on trial. The plan is almost coming together, and that trial is just one day away. And so, Jesus takes his last day aside with his disciples. It is an important one, after all. It is the day called Passover. Let's start in at verse 12. On the first day of the festival of unleavened bread, when it was customary to sacrifice the Passover lamb, Jesus' disciples asked him, "Where do you want us to go and make preparations for you to eat the Passover?" The question from the disciples has a bit of accidental irony. Where should we make preparations? But it becomes quite clear that God was preparing for this day for more than a millennia. The Passover feast was a remembrance. Many centuries had passed since the Israelites had been slaves in Egypt, but every year God called his people together, every family, to sacrifice a lamb and remember how God brought judgment on the cruel gods of Egypt, how death came to every door, and how, by the blood of a lamb, death passed over the houses of Israel. This was the story of Passover. It was rescue from slavery and escape from death. Now there is the heart of the story, not just for Israel, for God's plan for the world, escape from death. We'll get back to that later in the week. For now, it's time for Jesus and his disciples to remember. In verse 13, he sends two disciples into the city to find a man with an upstairs room that was already furnished and prepared. Indeed, God had planned ahead. And in verse 17, when evening came, Jesus arrived with the 12. So the disciples sit together to enjoy a meal. The table would be shaped in a U, and the disciples would be reclining on the floor, enjoying the fellowship of a good meal. In Jewish culture, eating together was a sign of unity. The same bread becomes a part of each of us. But for one, the unity was not genuine. Verse 18. While they were reclining at the table eating, he said, "Truly I tell you, one of you will betray me, one who is eating with me." Betray, it is a harsh word. Wounds from an enemy, I expect, but from a friend. There is no injury deeper than broken trust. And yet Jesus let it happen. It is the risk of true love. It amazes me sometimes just how much betrayal God puts up with and yet keeps on loving. And then the story turns. In verse 22, while they were eating, Jesus took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and gave it to his disciples, saying, "Take it, this is my body." Then he took a cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, and they all drank from it. "This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many." This is the first communion. Some call it Eucharist, which is Greek for give thanks, because Jesus gave thanks. Now in church, we've heard this story, but step out of that for a moment and sit with the disciples. For the disciples, this was Passover, which is full of tradition and memories. Four wine cups are shared in the course of the meal, and with them, the story of Passover. The first cup is blessing or sanctification, as God set his people apart in Egypt. The second is the cup of judgment, remembering the plagues. The third cup is redemption, remembering the blood of the lamb that saved them from death. And the fourth is praise. It was likely the third cup, the cup of redemption that Jesus shared when he said, "This is my blood." Now stop there. When a person offers you a cup of wine and says, "This is my blood," he's either a little off or making a seriously profound statement. The disciples knew Jesus. He was no crazy man. He had the words of truth and life. But sometimes Jesus said some things that almost shocked you into paying attention. What did he mean by "this is my blood"? It had happened before. In John 6, after Jesus had fed 5,000 people, the people tracked him down again to get more bread. Jesus said, "I am the bread of life." This was a little off-putting for some of the Jews. So Jesus said, "I tell you the truth, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you. Now, what does that mean? Understand that in the Bible, blood is perhaps the most important symbol. From the Passover to the cross, blood is the universal object lesson of the Bible, and blood always pictures life and death. And there was one law given to Noah, repeated to the Jews, and even passed on to Christians. God gave mankind food to sustain life, but do not eat meat with the lifeblood still in it. In other words, do not drink blood. Now, why is that one rule so important? God explains in Leviticus, because the life is in the blood. Pagan cultures throughout history have tried to drink in more life by drinking blood. Where do you think all the vampire stories come from? But God told his people, do not drink blood. Do not find life there. So imagine the shock of the Jews when Jesus said that unless you eat his flesh and drink his blood, you have no life in you. Even the disciples said this is a hard teaching. But Jesus explained, whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life. The key is in the word eternal. Every other place you try to find life, drink it all up, is mortal. It doesn't last. Don't drink blood means don't find your life there. It's empty. For us, there is only one way to eternal life, the blood of Christ. Now, the obvious but weird question is, does Jesus mean his literal blood? Again, churches argue this. There's nothing in the text of the Bible that says Jesus gave them literal blood. So it's just symbolic then, right? It's not real. Well, I think that depends on your definition of real. Jesus said, for my flesh is real food, and my blood is real drink. I think that Jesus is saying that there's a greater reality than what we call real. Just as the river of living water is real, but not physical, so I believe that finding eternal life in Jesus' blood is profoundly real. The blood I drink is not physical, but the life I live because of it is very real. And back at the Passover meal, look at what Jesus calls the wine in verse 24. This is my blood of the covenant. A covenant is a relationship bound by promise. A covenant is not a physical thing, but it is real. It is the very real relationship that God desires with us, that we abide in him and he in us. That was the picture of sharing bread. It becomes part of us and unites us together. What Jesus gave to his disciples was a covenant, binding us together in the bread of life, shared within each of us. Well, there's a whole lot more to this chapter, so I hope you'll take the time to read it well. Jesus' prayer at Gethsemane, the betrayal by Judas and the arrest, even a little personal story added by the author, Mark. Remember, Mark's gospel is generally considered to be Peter's account. Mark was a very young man at this time, but he shows up in the middle of the night at the arrest of Jesus. It's a funny little story and a very sad moment there in verse 51. And then the trial begins, so please read it all, and I'll meet you at Pilate's house in the morning in chapter 15.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.